Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto. I'm Phil Taylor, your host, and we are very pleased to be today to be speaking with Gustav Banyamutwa, who is in Belgium, associated with JamboNews.net. Gustav, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Mr. Taylor. Thank you.
You have, Jambo News and others are raising a very important issue, and I think around the world this is being thought about. And this is the issue of Rwandans in the diaspora who are leading their lives and building their families and being educated and participating in the societies where they currently living. But over them is the cloud of the armed struggle that took place in Rwanda between 1990 and 1994, which culminated in the assassination of two presidents, that of Burundi and Rwanda, and then a war and massacre of civilians. And Rwandans, I have found my work, who experienced that, or their families did, when they try to continue with their lives elsewhere, they are often come under harassment and a kind of demand that they recite a certain view of the events of 1994. Now, I know this has come down to the point in Belgium where outstanding individuals have stood for public office, but found themselves in difficulty. Can you tell us what that has happened there and what is being done about that?
Yes, yes, with pleasure. Thanks for asking. Maybe just a small small correction about what happened in 1994. There was a war, there were massacres, but above all, there was a genocide. At least one genocide, and some are talking about another genocide. So things that happened in Rwanda in the 90s were pretty severe. And as you mentioned, after that, a lot of people have fled out of the country because the new leaders of the country, who had actually seized power by a gunfire, naming the RPF, was basically a new form of dictatorship. And many people fled the country, even the continent, to be safe. That was my case. I arrived in Belgium many years ago, and with some other young people, we actually ran into an association because we were worried about what was still happening in our country and our region, in order to see what we could do from Belgium, from Europe, helping Rwandans who had stayed at home and also who had fled in nearby countries like DR Congo, Burundi, and so on. And throughout our activities, you can understand that we are very critical about the doings of the current regime, not only what they did in the 90s, so what they've been doing since they took power up until today. There are many things that are really wrong. And because of that, we are targeted, we are harassed, we are even victims of different kinds of actions, just trying to prevent us to do what we want to do, but even worse, preventing us to live our lives and to become full citizens in our own country, in our country of refugee. So that's what you mentioned earlier, because some of us wanted to run for elections, local elections, not only in the municipalities, but also in the parliament, to be member of the parliament and start to contribute in the development of our hosting countries, if I could say so. And because of our activities as critics of the Rwandan regime, many people have started to tarnish our image, and even starting to do some, to put some pressure, diplomatic pressure, to some politicians here in Belgium, so that we just, we are just excluded from those elections. That happened 2 years ago. Personally, I was impacted. I was refused to run for election, and two others were basically slandered in the media, and a lot of negative things which are not true were sent about them. Things like they have a genocide ideology, like they have hate against other Rwandans, and other terrible things like that. Mm-hmm. And after that happened, we decided to lodge a complaint to the judicial system because it was too severe to be left like that. It is difficult because we know how important freedom of expression is in the world, especially in Western countries. But still, the words that was being said and being written on our organization and our and did some of its members were too important, were too bad not to be fought. So we decided to file a complaint, and that was in January 2019, where we managed to take pretty much a lot of things that was said to were being written to us on Twitter, on Facebook, and some WordPress internet written by individuals, and we brought that to the prosecutor, where actually after a first analysis they understood they should investigate. Mm-hmm. That was January 2019. And a few months ago we were able to consult the investigation and see where it was standing after almost a year and a half. And we saw that they managed to identify up to 19 individuals who were actually doing that frequently and with probably an intention to harm and to harass ourselves. And those people should normally be called by the justice, by the instructing judge, as they call him in Belgium, to explain what they actually wrote on Jumbo ISBL as an organization, and also about its members as individuals. And if they fail to give proper explanations, then they might be prosecuted on the count of slander, defamation, incitement to hatred, incitement to discrimination, and even call for violence. Hmm.
We're speaking to Gustav Banyamukwa concerning these actions. Are you, what sort of support, does the media take notice of this? Is this being written about in Belgian media, Europeans? Do the human rights organizations like Amnesty, others, do they take an interest in this? I noticed you cited an Amnesty report in the complaint.
True. We have cited an Amnesty report because already 10 years ago, they made an investigation and saw that those kind of things that were being said on Rwandan's critics all around the world were quite severe, and an attention had to be brought to that. Precisely, in order to be clear, there are three things which are coming very often and that people should know about. The first one is that they call people genocidaire, meaning people who have perpetrated the genocide. And they call them easily, just like that. Once you stand up and you start to criticize the regime, it just gives you that image of being a genocide perpetrator. And when you leave, you get in troubles, of course. It doesn't mean that they are not genocide perpetrators. There are, of course, but they are calling that anyone who actually criticized the regime. That should be forbidden. People who do that should actually be punished, because you don't call someone a genocide perpetrator without any solid ground to that. The second thing is to call people, to say that people have a genocide ideology. And this is a nasty one, if I may say, because genocide ideology, how do you measure that? How do you see that someone has a genocide ideology? We think it has to be seen through what the people say, what the people do, and what the people write. This is how actually you can see that someone has a genocide ideology. But whenever we ask them, we challenge them, what is this genocide ideology? They don't have any facts. They don't have any facts about what has been written, said, or done from those people. And the consequences of calling people that they have a genocide ideology is very bad, because it brings terror within the Rwandan community. The people who have survived genocide, or who have some of their relatives who were killed in genocide, they start to fear the others. They keep some kind of anger about those people. And also someone who's being called a genocide, someone with a genocide ideology, he doesn't want that. He wants to defend himself. And he also becomes aggressive. And then what we see between the Rwandan community abroad is just tension rising and rising because of nothing. Mm-hmm. And the last thing, which is also impacting non-Rwandans, is calling people genocide deniers. This one is also a bit nasty, if I may say, because to deny a genocide, it's very straightforward. There are laws that describe what is denying a genocide, and especially here in Belgium. But even with that law, there has not been any single person accused, formally accused, and even prosecuted because of denying genocide. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, you keep hearing this kind of accusation, this kind of slander coming from Rwanda, and calling anyone who actually do not agree with the regime a genocide denier. And that affects Rwandans, but also foreigners. A lot of foreigners working on Rwandans. There is a famous Canadian journalist also who has made a very interesting book about the crimes of the current regime. She has been targeted and slandered in that same way of being a genocide denier. Mm-hmm. So we took these three frequent defamation acts, and then we went to the justice, because we want those people who call those names to be questioned about the grounds and the reason they have. And if they fail to do so, they should be punished because of defamation and slander.
Yes. Again, we're speaking to Gustav Banyamutwa. Among the complainants is Jambu, jambunews.net. You can find it on the internet. By the way, Gustav Banyamutwa has a Twitter account. I really recommend people go to that regularly to be informed about all this. You know, reading about this from abroad, it seems like serious damage was done to those individuals who stood or wished to stand for election. Now, do I understand it right? Were they excluded by, not permitted to run, or had they, what took place there? Did the parties decide because of the accusations that they couldn't be candidates? What was the damage to them in that instance?
It was the second option that you've mentioned. The parties through which they wanted to run, they got scared because of the diplomatic pressure, and basically withdraw their support to the candidates. So they could run as independents, but without the support of the party. And in that case, it means just to not to run. But that was one thing, because there were actually two events in which these defamation and slandering had a severe impact on the Rwandese in Belgium. The first one is being excluded from the elections. We've talked about it. And the second one was in 2018, when Jambo wanted to go to the parliament in order to make, to organize a conference about the law on genocide denying, precisely. Because as citizens, anyone has the right to give some input and some feedback to the MPs. In 2018, they were preparing the law to repress genocide denial in Belgium. And I wanted to be part of that works. We wanted to give our input. But the regime from Rwanda didn't want us to do that because they knew we would come with very strong arguments to make sure that the law is passed correctly in Belgium and not the same way as it is in Rwanda, which is a terrible violation of the freedom of speech. Mm-hmm. And when we were trying to do that, they started their campaign again with the same kind of accusation. And there also, the parliament got scared. I'm really sorry to say that. The MPs got scared, simply. And then they refused it to be part of the discussion. Nevertheless, our arguments were that strong, because of course we had prepared a good file that we had sent to all the 170 MPs, if I remember well. Our arguments were strong enough that eventually, when the law came out 1 year and a half later, the law was almost as we want it to be, being a law that will punish people based on what they did and not only on a vague accusation from Rwanda, for instance.
Yeah. There have been instances in Europe where their courts have found, I believe it happened in Sweden and some other places, where they actually identified individuals working for the Rwandan authorities who were either harassing or threatening or spreading false information about people. Do you have that any hope there in Belgium that you might have that kind of finding so that people could maybe breathe easier, that there is an awareness that the government in Kigali spends a lot of time keeping track of Rwandan nationals?
Oh, yes, absolutely. We believe the action that we have started will lead to this kind of warning regarding the harassment of critics living in Belgium. But I would also say that it is a broader call. Today, I think Canada and North America are one of the countries that uses most social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, you name it. And it's a tendency all around the world that social media has become the key interaction platform between individuals. And there, it's pretty much new in the world. But you have individuals who go on social media with the goal to harass and to traumatize, to attack others. That's a big issue. Here in Belgium, they are already looking at laws that will actually prevent that. And our case, as Rwandans, with another layer of harassment, I mean calling people genocide perpetrators, genocide deniers, or genocide ideology, that's not small things. Huh? It's not someone who stole your bike or who didn't pay $100. No, it's really bad things. Genocide is killing people simply because of what they are, with the goal to exterminate them. Oh, it's a serious matter. So we think our case, on top of the dynamic that different legislators want to put an end to this kind of harassment on social media, would definitely lead to something. And that is important because for the moment we observe in the Rwandan community, a lot of hard feelings, a lot of suspicions between people, and even sometimes hate based on nothing. And this is derived from everything which is happening on social media by people either in Belgium or even all around the world using fake accounts. And we believe then justice has to send a clear message saying that these kind of things has to stop.
Yeah. There is, I notice a discrepancy that seems to be a problem actually if it were paid attention to. And I notice that your documents that have been put in the court refer to this. There's a lot of imprecision in language, and there's some differences between the government of Rwanda and the even United Nations bodies. For example, the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda referred to genocide against the Tutsi and moderate Hutu. That is not the language, my understanding, of the government of Rwanda. And that when they insist on making it exclusively one ethnic group, they're really departing from the formulation that was heard in the courts in Arusha. Could you comment on that?
Yes, this is one of the hottest topics that divides most the Rwandans. It's about the correct naming of what happened. I agree that when you talk about a genocide, it's fair to mention the group which was targeted. That is fair. From a judicial point of view, it's fair when you want to say that there has been a genocide targeting the Tutsis. It's fair to say, to talk about genocide against Tutsi. The issue is that in Rwanda, that was not the only thing that happened. That is the most difficult. And some people, of course, have difficulty to understand it. But others are trying to hide everything that happened behind. And you said it, there was a war. And the war came with a lot of war crimes. And after the war and after the genocide, then again against the Tutsi, there were also massacres against the Hutu population, the innocent Hutu populations in Rwanda, but also that had fled out of Rwanda to nearby Congo. And those massacres were actually investigated by UN experts. And in 2010, they issued a mapping report, a report which they called the mapping report. Those who know the Prize Nobel winner, Dr. Denis Mukwege, will definitely know what we're talking about, because he's one of the most supportive advocates of the mapping report. And in that mapping report, they simply demonstrated, they simply showed that the massacres against the Hutu populations amount to genocide. What does it mean then? It means that in Rwanda, it is fair to talk about a genocide against Tutsi population, which we all have heard about. It's totally fair to talk about a genocide against the Hutu population. It's also fair to talk about war crimes, and ultimately to talk about crimes against humanity, which is another of severe crime that was made towards innocent people during almost one decade, the 90s.
Yes. Well, that, by the way, was a point of serious debate within the International Tribunal because of this very problem with nomenclature, you might call it, deciding, but also, were there some perpetrators who were not Hutu? And there was the acknowledgement by the tribunal that yes, there were, however, none of them were prosecuted. This is a sore point, makes it difficult for my next question, which is, how are we going to achieve reconciliation if we stay with this formatted argument it comes from Kigali?
The answer is pretty much forward. We cannot achieve reconciliation. We might achieve different things, like submission, like denial, like fake reconciliation. There is someone who was using fake reconciliation, but we cannot talk, we cannot achieve genuine reconciliation within Rwandans if all victims are not recognized according to what they suffered. And as you have just mentioned, if all perpetrators are not prosecuted and punished according to what they did. That's one of the biggest issues that we have in Rwanda. It's one of the one part of the perpetrators are simply living in impunity since 26 years, even more since 30 years now, when the war started in 1990. So that's a big issue, a terrible issue that needs to be addressed in a way or another.
Mm-hmm. Well, actions like that is being taken here, formal complaint being registered, it being taken up, this has got to be one of the more helpful ways to do it, because it involves some degree of adjudication, fact-finding, and such. How is this going to unfold? We have COVID-19, which I assume is slowing everything down in terms of courts and such. Can you tell us what you expect is going to happen here with this matter?
First, I think this kind of trial has to be unfolded with political willing, because it's a question of how the society is controlled somehow. So the question is not that easy. Some will definitely argue about freedom of speech, freedom of association, also basic rights that are guaranteed by the Constitution of Belgium. So we believe there must be a political will from the leaders of Belgium in order to seriously address this issue. That will take time, and we hope that before the end of 2020, a decision will be made whether they will prosecute everybody identified on that list, or if they will just choose, I will say, the most obvious offenses, because there are some obvious offenses they cannot just let go. Mm-hmm. But we think there will be a trial, because they cannot just close their eyes and say nothing happened. If they do so, it would be like giving their consent that Rwandans can simply slander each other on internet indefinitely. Mm-hmm. I don't think they will take this political risk, this political decision, to just say, you guys, go ahead, keep calling each other these kind of names, because things will go worse and worse, up to maybe some act of violence at the end. Yeah. So I believe they will do something. Now, what, when, those are different questions. And I have also to add that in those 19 persons that were identified, some of them are living in Rwanda, which makes the case even a bit more complex, because they will need to involve Rwandan authorities as well as Rwandan willing to solve this case. But there also, we believe that people will sit back and they will analyze the situation and see that they have to do something. Even in Rwanda, even if they are a dictator, they don't have any interest to see the Rwandan nation, the Rwandan community abroad, tearing apart on internet and social media. So we believe they will do something one way or another.
Mm-hmm. I suppose, lastly, I might just point out, I mean, this issue, of course, does involve Belgians. The Belgians themselves are quite aware they had a historic role in the events of Rwanda. And so it has implications even for the Belgian parties who have often differed and loudly with each other over this issue, is it not?
That's true, but they have to put an end to it. I mean, it's been 30 years that the war started, 26 years that we had the genocide and a second genocide. Now people are just boiling and talking about it. They have to put an end to it. New generation are coming in, new generation are taking the leads here in Belgium. They don't want to carry on and do the same mistakes as previous generation of leaders. So we think there is a positive dynamic to put an end to it. And in a way where people will be respected in their history. Because what happened the last 25 years, only the RPF narrative, which is made of a lot of crimes, was being established in Belgium, in US, in Canada. And it has come to an end. It cannot go on like that. So we believe some people will take their real responsibilities as leaders of those countries, potentially leaders of the world, and say, to solve that question once for all.
Well, Gustav Banyamutwa, we're very grateful. It's very informative. We really wish you luck, and we hope everyone will follow you, Gustav Banyamutwa, Twitter, and jambonews.net. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much as well. Talk to you later.
Your pleasure.